This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
All right, here we go on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Royals baseball on the air a little early today. Day game right here on your home for the Royals. So Vern's on Deck show gets going at 11. So just 1 hour today, the Royals have a chance to once again get a little closer to clinching a playoff spot. It almost looked like, depending on how the Twins game was going last night, for a bit, it looked like there was a chance they could have clinched today. That is not actually going to be possible.
Stupid Marlins.
Not going to be possible today, but they could definitely get a sweep against the Nats and get very, very close to actually clinching a playoff spot. But as we know, with the win yesterday, it means it's two in a row. The pitching staff has been stellar, setting a franchise record of 26 consecutive scoreless innings. And the Royals currently sit tied with the Tigers, the second wild card spot. We all know that the Minnesota Twins did win yesterday. That's why they can't clinch today, they being the Royals. And then the Seattle Mariners are 2.5 back, and they only have 3 games left in their entire season. So it's looking better and better by the day, by the hour, for the Kansas City Royals to ultimately clinch a playoff spot here. Not today, maybe tomorrow.
It can't be today. Tomorrow's a bit dicey too, because again, the hurricane down near Atlanta that's pushing their game. Well, it's has massive implications across the league. Atlanta's one game out of a playoff spot. They already have to play a doubleheader on Monday before they would hypothetically play a wild card game on Tuesday. And none of us have any idea how they will line up Max Fried or all of their pitching for the Royals. You know, and again, most of this stuff is just life. And I'm not like mad if the Braves have this. It's just,
I will say Major League Baseball. The people that are going through uprooting their lives during the hurricane stuff, that's more important. I will say Major League Baseball could have made this a lot better. The hurricanes can change. We all know this, but
sure.
On Monday, neither team was playing. They knew there was a chance this was going to happen. They could have just had them play a doubleheader this week, like earlier.
Yeah.
So I played Major League Baseball.
It's not news that the hurricane was coming. It's been coming for a while.
This is not a tornado where you only know like 20 minutes before that it's headed your direction. You know, they have known. So I blame baseball a little bit for this. And the easiest way for this to not impact the Royals is for the Royals to handle their business again today, sweep the Nationals, and put themselves in a really good spot. Because otherwise, you were looking at the pitching matchups, and there's a chance that you could have to now see Chris Sale, and Max Fried of the Braves. Hopefully, it doesn't matter because the Royals get a sweep today, and then they may not even have to win the rest of the way to clinch. They could get clinched because the Twins are going to keep on losing or something like that. But to this point, you got to love what the Royals have done in these two games against the Nationals. And yesterday, in particular,
a moment of true desperation, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, they were down and out, up against it, asses on the line 2 days ago, and now they are comfortable.
They are.
They're not in a spot. It's not a lock by any means. They can't just get fat and happy, but they're comfortable versus yesterday, 2 days ago, pins and needles.
Sure. And yesterday, they get 3 runs on the board. That was just refreshing to see. The way the pitching staff had been going, you're like, actually, 3 runs, that's all. That kind of feel like that's all they needed. And that is ultimately all it took yesterday, as this entire staff has been terrific. And I think they're just a looser bunch. That quickly, it can change it. And we mentioned yesterday that after the losing streak and everything, now there's a chance that, Cody, they can actually have some momentum depending on how today goes, and as long as you don't get swept by the Braves or whatever, like, you could actually have momentum all of a sudden heading into the postseason. It can be a completely different vibe than it was 72 hours ago.
I think what has stood out, obviously, is, look, the offense, is it still good? No. Impossible to say that that would be the case, but it's functional enough at the moment. At the very least, at least it wasn't like 2 days ago when you're like, oh my God, please just get somebody around to score a damn run. At least they got some runs early on, enough so that, yeah, you are just kind of writing out what the bullpen can do. And yesterday was a perfect example of how I think they win in the playoffs. Not shut a team out. That's probably unrealistic. Most games have a starter go. And in this case, typically a starter would go longer. But for the longest time, I thought every starter was going to have to go 7 innings for them to win a playoff game. With the new makeup of the bullpen, I actually don't think that's the case. Because this gap, this 2-inning gap, is officially covered by Daniel Damn Lynch. He's been a revelation out of the bullpen. He hasn't let up a single run gold since he's been called back up to the majors and is a full-time reliever. He hasn't let up a single run, not one, during that time. So now all of a sudden, where you thought for a while you only liked Urseg and you like Long a little bit, then, oh, I really like Bubich. Okay, now we got something. Schreiber's not bad, and now I got Daniel Lynch mowing people down every night? That's five guys. When's the last time in this bullpen that you felt confident that five guys were capable of getting an out? Never. Not a single day this year until, like, now have I felt that way. So the combination of, like, starters in there. Look, I'm not saying
I'm not trying to say it's HDH for all five, but
the level of confidence I have in five guys to get an out.
I mean, look, I feel better about the bullpen, but it is... What you're describing of this, like, four pitchers or whatever, is still such a small sample size of it actually working that I forgive me for being very skeptical that suddenly we should feel good if the starter goes five innings and the bullpen can cover four more. I mean, I'm going to be definitely skeptical. They're going to have to prove that to me in the postseason. That's just the reality of it based off of what has been the other 150 games, basically, where they haven't had four or five guys. I mean, the four guys that now we're saying are pitching well, is this true? But that's like a last 8 day kind of thing. You know what I mean? Sure. Urseg has been Urseg. We know that.
Yeah, we're good there.
Sam Long has had moments. They're all having a moment right now.
Well, but I mean, Daniel Lynch has been having a moment for a month and a half. Like, you know,
yeah,
like,
I don't know if he's been in the bullpen for a month and a half.
Even. Month?
Has it been a month and a half?
I bet that's the case. I think it's at least been a month. I mean, he's got like 18 innings scoreless. Okay. I don't think you can get that over the course of. I guess 18 innings
because he's pitching 2 or 3 innings at a time. Yeah, but I don't know if it's either way, it has been impressive. I'm just saying the entire group to say that they got four arms that you can just feel good about. I'm not there is all I'm saying.
I'm saying I feel better about the last four arms in the bullpen than at any particular point of the season. And not just because they're shutting everybody out, which they are. 26 consecutive scoreless innings is a hell of a way to go into the postseason. Mm-hmm. He came back for the Royals on August 26th, so 5 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago.
So we'll split
the difference.
About
a month.
We'll split the difference.
It wasn't 2 weeks, but it certainly wasn't. Yeah. Like, I was a little long on six, you were a little short on two.
Yeah.
It's been a month. But in that month, he's now made 9 appearances. He's let up 0 runs. He's gone multiple innings 6 times, and he still hasn't let up more than 2 hits in a single inning, and still hasn't get or a single appearance. Sorry, not a single inning. And he's not walking anybody. He has 3 walks in those 9 appearances. But to go along with that, we always knew they were going to win with their starters.
Absolutely.
Lorenzen got him only 30 pitches last night. In comes Lynch. I mean, it was essentially a bullpen game, and they still pitched a shutout.
Now, I will say Lynch was already warming up to at that point. So
he was coming in anyway.
It might have been one more inning or you know, max for Lorenzen. Not downplaying what Lynch has done. He deserves all the credit. We mentioned it the first time they moved into the bullpen and how effective he is. And yeah, right now it seems like there's 4 or 5. I'm just saying, like, I get the skepticism, and I'm one of them. About 4 or 5 guys, like, oh, now they can cover if they need to go 4 innings. I'm not sold if they could do that against a playoff quality team. Remember, some of this is happening against the Nationals right now.
Sure.
But that is for getting in the playoffs. I don't care who they're playing. You're discussing bigger picture. We're discussing bigger picture.
But to get in the playoffs, their odds of getting in the playoffs have gone up, and I haven't looked.
Making the playoffs.
Have you looked at Fangraphs? Boy, you're right back.
Find me the audio where I said they weren't making the playoffs. I never said they weren't making the playoffs.
No, but I mean, like all of us, and I'm not saying this is wrong, the wavering fair after a 7-game losing streak in which we thought the chances of them making the playoffs had gone down significantly. Fangraphs have got them back up to 84.3%. Right now, the postseason, with the Twins at 22.7%, the Tigers ahead of them at 91%, and they got the Mariners at 1.7%. So, I mean, some miracle it would take to get them in there. I would still like to see one sign of life from the offense before the postseason starts. But I also keep remembering every time I see a lineup, there's just no way that's how they're winning in the postseason. So do I really care? Honestly, maybe not. They're never winning in the postseason, out slugging some team 12-8 that day. Every day they're starting Gurriel and Hampson. And like, it's just not, it is not a playoff caliber lineup, if you want me to be honest. And unless Vinny Pasquantino comes back on his white horse come the ALCS, they're probably going to maintain that because they just don't have enough depth to cover it. But if they're going to get great starting pitching, then all is well. The key, I think, now is, okay, now that you can take a breath, and it looks like we think they're still going to make the postseason. I didn't waver. I told you if I thought they lost 2 days ago.
Sure. Well, yeah,
I was, for the first time, going to change my tune and say I didn't think they were going to make it. They won the next two games. Now I think it's vitally important. Keep your foot on the gas so that the starting pitching you need to win a playoff game is lined up the way you want it. I don't want Cole Reagans to have to pitch on Sunday. I don't care who's pitching for the Braves. I don't want Cole Reagans to have to pitch on Sunday. I want them to get enough days that Cole Reagans and Waka and Lugo don't have to go against the Braves so that you can use some of those guys in that series. At least only one does so that you can have the other somewhere in this
series. The question I would be fascinated to get the answer to, if they were to clinch, I hear you like, hey, they don't have to, but how much do they, I don't know if they publicly would say it or not, how much would they rather go to Baltimore? How much would they rather be fine with going to Houston? I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want to go to Houston right now.
I would rather go to Baltimore.
So that's what's weird about it. I hear you that, yes, they hopefully have things clinched to where it's not a must win.
But do you
want to
win so you can stay in Baltimore?
But it's tough because also, on one hand, would you rather just have Cole Reagans available for game one in Houston, or would you rather not have him available for game one in Baltimore? It's a tough, it's an interesting debate. Like, there's a big chunk of me that would say I'd rather just go to Baltimore, and if I have to start a lesser pitch
Reagans,
against the Houston Astros. Uh-huh. There is not a great team in baseball this year. We've discussed that multiple times. There's not a great American League team, that's for sure. But I still think if you look at what the Astros have done after a horrific start to the season, and still the names, maybe it's like some of the names in that lineup. I'm just saying, like, Baltimore is not playing great baseball. They beat the Yankees last night, I think, and beat them up kind of good.
But they're sub .500 since the All-Star break.
So maybe I'm overvaluing that, and you say, hey, just trust your best pitchers. You'll figure it out. I'm mentioning the Orioles because against Houston, I think you're going to have to score.
Yeah.
Like, against Baltimore, I could see the Royals winning like a 2-1 game. Against Houston, I don't know how many 1-0, 2-1 type of games you're going to get. In terms of like a true pitcher's duel, where with that lineup, Yordan Alvarez and Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve, just to name a couple of the guys there, I don't know if you're not having some games where you need 5-6 runs to win. And that scares the crap out of me.
Look, I understand that. I've told you, you should want to avoid the Astros as much as teams should want to avoid the Chiefs in the playoffs. So, like, I'm not doing this for the, like, good of getting past the team that's always in the ALCS. I'm just worried that the Royals' path of playoff success has to include, it, to get through the wild card round, has to include Reagans and Lugo. And if you have to wait for one of those guys to pitch in game three, will you get to game three for it to matter?
Well, you know how this goes, though. If it's a game two and it's a must win, like, they'll throw them in there in the second inning on the second game if they have to. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we've seen this play out. Like, the way they manage in the regular season goes out the window a lot of times with that. If it's a must win game two, it's the whole Bumgarner thing. I mean, yes. I don't want to remember that. But you know what I mean? Like, the terms
gross.
Of normally Madison Bumgarner would not have come in the seventh inning or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But it was a World Series. So it's like, screw it. We're doing it. He was also on a historically dominant run at that point in time. We'll see. Someone said that the Yankees are loaded in the batter's box. Yeah, but you don't have to worry about the Yankees till the divisional round. They're going to have
a
bye.
Later problem
the Guardians and the Yankees are going to have a bye.
Yes. They've already both clinched.
So you don't have to deal with that. Worry about that when the time comes in the ALDS.
Speaking of future games, the Chiefs obviously have the Chargers coming up on Sunday. And please clinch, because the Royals game would start at 2:05 and then the Royals would start at 3:25. And that feels like an intense watching period.
Wow. Yeah.
Where the Royals would be on the main screen for me, I'll be honest, for the final three innings of their playoff life, maybe, if they need that game. Yeah, I think I'll probably be tuned into that one.
Yeah.
Obviously, if they get it clinched, we don't have to worry about that. But I saw the reports yesterday. Same thing. Justin Herbert was a limited participant in practice. I told you last week I thought it was coaching malpractice because you have the Chiefs coming up. But once again, I'll put this in a different way because I'm curious what the answer is. There's a pretty good chance that the Chargers are going to be without both their left and right tackle on a high ankle sprain that got re-aggravated just last week and is only 2 weeks old. If this were Patrick Mahomes, would you want him playing in this game? I'm not asking this question because I'm a Chiefs fan and I want the Chiefs to beat the Chargers on Sunday. I honestly think it is idiotic to let Justin Herbert play football this week. And I cannot understand why the Chargers do this to themselves sometimes. Because if this were Mahomes, I would want Andy Reid to tell Patrick Mahomes to be nowhere near this damn game.
So I think, especially when your team is 2-1, which is what the Chargers are, you know, if they were 0-3, there's an argument to be made that
save
says, hey,
season. Sure.
Our season is on the line. We have to have him out there. You're 2-1. If you lose to the Chiefs, like I know we joke about the Chargers, but like their season's not over in terms of a wild card berth, even though I don't think they'll ultimately get there. But like, you would rather have Herbert available for the long haul. So no, I'm with you. And definitely if you're saying if the shoe was on the other foot and the Chiefs were sitting in the same scenario, 2-1, you're ready to play their rival, but both their tackles were out, and it's a regular season game, and Mahomes had a bum ankle at the same time. Yeah, I think a lot of us would be saying that, you know what, go ahead and go with the backup, and it's Carson Wentz. In their case, their backup's Taylor Heineke, who, of course, doesn't have the same track record as Carson Wentz. But Heineke has started
plenty of games in this league.
But, I mean, Carson Wentz was...
Yes, Carson Wentz
you get
a
what I'm saying.
Track record, yes.
I mean...
I'm just saying, like, it could be worse at backup. It's not Easton Stick.
Well, Easton Stick's
a guy
still
who's
there.
Actually made starts for a qualified team before.
Yes, he has played football games in the NFL. but
what? That's better than some backups.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't. Do you expect Herbert to play? I don't think he's playing.
I think he's playing.
You do think he's playing?
Mm-hmm. I do. I think they're going to make the mistake, and I think they're going to play him. Getting him to limited participant by Wednesday, you think that they're just goofing around?
That is a little gamesmanship.
I told you, but here's the thing. The reason why I think he's playing is because they were stupid enough to play him last week. Had no business playing him last week. It didn't make any sense. You were getting ready to be at home against your number one team to beat inside your own division, and they still started his ass against Pittsburgh. I think this is... Sometimes Andy Reid runs into this too. This is the old school coach mindset that is a mistake. It is a mistake to be like, we're football players and we play through injuries. Again, if this is a playoff game, throw Herbert's ass in there. What's the risk? He re-aggravates his high ankle sprain, and then he has to what? Heal it in the offseason? Oh, no, right? Plenty of time. Took Mahomes, if you remember, after his high ankle sprain in the postseason run, he said it was like 3 months before he felt normal. 4 months before he felt normal. So you're not even going to give Herbert a breather, a break, a second? He has to play the rest of the season with this thing. You're going to risk it?
Yeah, and
the re-aggravation and the lack of tackles. I think it's not just that his ankle's hurt. It's that it was hurt, he hurt it again, and he doesn't have his starting left or right tackle. That's just that's a dangerous setup for a team to get a player.
All the other injuries that they're doing, plus on the defensive side too. So just like your likelihood, of course, I know they don't approach this usually. They think
they can win
every single game. That's the mindset of any organization. But like you got to have a little bit of perspective on where you're at. If Herbert plays, like, also, what are the chances he makes it through the whole game? I mean, you said it. He re-aggravated because he got sacked by Pittsburgh. So if Chris Jones or Karlaftis or whatever roll up on that, not intentionally, but they just roll up on it and a sack or whatever, like, then he's out of the game, and then you're throwing in Taylor Heineke in the middle of a game. Like, that's, you know, I don't think Herbert would finish the game if he ends up playing on Sunday.
No. You're just kidding, but that's the thing. Like, and this is what I don't understand. Look, I still think they're going to play him. Maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm way off base, and they've learned their lesson from the previous week. The fact that they got him to limited participant, and Justin Herbert was out on the podium saying identical things he was saying the week before against Pittsburgh, which is, I'm going to do anything I can to play. I think Herbert sees this as, this is the Chiefs. I have to play against the Chiefs. I have to beat the Chiefs. This is the team that stands in our way. And they are not seeing the forest through the trees. They are instead looking at a one-game sample and not realizing how long their NFL season is left. And honest to God, it all goes back to the same thing. The likelihood he's getting hit is pretty high if they're on backup tackles and a weak interior offensive line. I just don't understand it. If this were Mahomes, I'd be pissed if Andy played him.
For Herbert, though, too, it's weird. Because Harbaugh and the system, Greg Roman, the OC, what they run, we know it's in their wins, it's been all about running the ball. It's been J.K. Dobbins, who has had a really nice start to the season.
What's been the best part
they
of the Chiefs'
haven't
defense,
been asking.
Though?
Yeah, the Chiefs have been very good, as we discussed earlier in the week, against the run and what they held Zach Moss and Robinson and Derrick Henry to. But Justin Herbert, in three games, I know he got hurt one of them, but 399 yards, 4 touchdowns, and an interception. They're not like relying on it, which is also another reason I think is interesting to play Herbert. It's their formula. Now, maybe you say against the Chiefs he's going to have to. Okay. But in these other games, they either won or been in the game late, like last week, and they haven't been relying on the quarterback. It's been about the running game. So like that actually gives me even more reason to think that I might as well start Taylor Heinicke and see. Like, they know their formula. Even if the Chiefs have been good against the run, their formula is still not going to be Quentin Johnson burning Trent McDuffie. The Chiefs have been shutting down number one receivers all year.
Although Quentin Johnson's been better this year.
He's better, yeah. But like he's their number one receiver right now, isn't he? Because Josh Palmer's
barely played.
Hurt or whatever, yeah.
That's the whole thing.
Ladd McConkey in the slot. Okay, he gets you for 45 yards in this game. Okay.
Sure. Whatever. You know, I don't really care. That's not going to be the thing that beats you. But the problem is all that, right? So you would need to, like, you're right. Their methodology has been about the run. But in a game where the Chiefs' run defense has been the singular best, most dominant part of their defense, if that gets shut down, then you got to rely on the pass. And in must-pass situations, do you want Chris Jones coming down on your backup tackle? Coming down on your quarterback? Costing him three more weeks? Because what happens here is you started him last week and it could have been a loss. But what if you turn what should have been a 2-2 start to a 2-6 start because you have Taylor Heinicke for the next month? Like, and maybe it won't happen and maybe they'll get lucky. I think it's like
think
he
this
might
is close
come out
on
clean.
Sunday though. Like, we'll do our game predictions.
It's division game, so I tend to think they're close.
We'll do our game predictions tomorrow. Like, yeah, right now I think this is like it ends up being a late touch. It ends up being like a 5-point win or something.
Yeah, I don't think it's a 9. What it was 8.5 or
it's down
eight?
To 7.5 now. Actually,
okay, people going the other way. But still, yeah.
But that might be to your point a little bit, the thought that some maybe have that Herbert's going to play. Maybe that's why the line has gone down. We just know how a lot of these divisional games go. Even though Mahomes plays his best typically in them. Last year was an exception. Otherwise, he's been dominant, as the Chiefs have been dominant in these divisional games. But in terms of like margin of victory, I would be somewhat surprised if it was by
Chiefs
a touchdown
or more. Chiefs have one of the lowest margins of victory in the NFL right now.
This year as a whole. But even over the last time they went out and just blew out a team was what? The Bears game last year?
Yeah, that sounds right.
I think that's the last time where they just flat out from start to finish dominated a football team, and it showed on the scoreboard. There's been games where physically they've dominated an opponent, and we're like, hey, they're not capitalizing. But I think that Bears game, they got up like, what was it, like 30-something to 10 at one point? I can't remember what the final score
was. But the same thing applies. This is why the Chiefs irritate you sometimes. That Ravens game could have been won by more. That Falcons game could have been won by more. It never is. Not with the Chiefs. It should have been won by more. Both of those games should have been won by more. Should have been won by double digits, which you and I, for the most part, if you're up double digits in the fourth quarter, as far as I'm concerned, that's mostly an ass kicking. Because the NFL is a single score, 3-4 point league every week. Chiefs just fall into that same thing unless the offense absolutely clicks. Again, they got a lot of injured teams coming up on the schedule because they got the 49ers a couple of weeks from now, and now the Raiders have started to suffer some injuries. So we'll see which way that goes over the next few weeks. But yeah, if this were the other way around, I'd be begging Andy not to play him. Begging him not to play him.
Coming up in about 5 to 10 minutes, actually 10 minutes, we'll get to our Chiefs contributor and insider, Dane Hughes from the Chiefs Radio Network. Of course, Chiefs this afternoon or this Sunday afternoon right here on 96.5 The Fan. Dane Hughes, Mitch Holthus, Josh Klingler, Dan Israel on the call. So much of discussion after the last game and really for the last year about the Chiefs has always been what? They get all these calls, right? That was definitely happening in an Atlanta game from social media and everything. So Rob Gronkowski was on with Kay Adams recently and was asked, Gronk, do you think the Chiefs get more calls than your Patriots did during your dynasty run? And Gronk said, maybe if the computer cooperates.
Do the Chiefs get calls? Do they get better calls than the Patriots got?
I would say so. I mean, I didn't really get calls. I mean, I was double teamed. I was basically executed off the line of scrimmage half the time and 5 yards into the route. And then they would call pass interference on me when I was trying to get the guy off of me. Remember when I hit Tre'Davious White? Because he held me 4 times in one play, and then Tom threw the interception to him. And then I finally flipped out because that was the 50th time I got held that year. So then I gave him the people's elbow just like that, like it was a WWE ring. It was just, you know, a bang, bang play. I didn't mean to do that, but it just happened because I was frustrated by not getting any single calls at all. So, yeah, the Chiefs get way more calls than the Patriots. I mean, I don't even remember getting calls.
Really?
I mean, specifically for myself, I didn't get any calls. Maybe as a team, I don't know. I don't remember those calls. But
yeah,
specifically,
myself. You think the second somebody touched Brady, flags weren't flying? What are you, really?
I mean, I don't remember those ones, okay? I'm just talking about myself. Tom might have gotten some calls, but for myself, I'm talking, I used to just get pounded, you know, from the linebacker all the way to
That's
the safety.
True.
I used to get held. The guys used to jump on my back, and the ball would be thrown to me, and there would be nothing called. So, I mean, Tom might have gotten some calls, though.
I gotta say, sometimes, yeah.
not surprising, Grog's answer. He obviously was having some fun with it.
Honest to God,
as well.
They did get to beat him up a lot.
Oh, well, the big reason, remember, a lot of people assume that he was just
unfair.
Older or whatever. Like, Gronk is still how many years younger
he's
than Kelce?
He's the same, pretty much the same age as Kelce.
But he retired how many years ago now? Same year in Tampa, right? Same year with Brady. So
Gronkowski is 35 years old.
Yeah, so, but you would think he's way, way older. I think a lot of people
Travis Kelce is 34. He's actually a year older than Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
Not even younger.
He was having some fun with the answer there. I mean, both teams get calls. There's no question. But I just don't think it's any more than a typical team does. It's the same reason back then when we thought Brady got all the calls. It's because they were on our television all the time. It's because they were in big games all the time. It's because they were winning all the time. Same thing is happening. The Chiefs are in primetime all the time. Mahomes is in these big Sunday afternoon windows, even against the Chargers. It's Jim Nance and Romo. That game will be watched by a ton of people. It'll be one of the highest rated games of the weekend because it's the Chiefs and it's Nance and Romo. And I'm sure there will be a call that goes in the Chiefs' favor, even though in the noon window in the crappy Jags 0-3 game against whoever the hell they're playing this week, there will be a bad call that goes for the team they're playing, but nobody will be watching and notice.
Because I'll never notice that the Jags got a call against the Commanders.
Because nobody cares and nobody hates the Jags.
Yeah.
Does anybody know a Jags fan? I've never met one.
Nope. Don't know a single one. Sorry. Maybe one day, you know?
All right, up next, we'll talk with Dane and Hughes. Want to get his perspective on those calls, plus if he agrees with us how the Chargers should approach Sunday afternoon games. That's coming up next.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age, wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things, like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
On 96.5 The Fan. Reminder, coming up in 30 minutes, Vern's On Deck show as the Royals wrap up their series in the nation's capital against the Nationals. Going for the sweep, Michael Wacha on the bump. That's always good news based on how he has pitched throughout this 2024 season. The Royals cannot officially clinch today, but they definitely can get a step closer to doing that. Let's talk some more football, though, for a little bit here with Danian Hughes, one of our Chiefs analysts, of course, part of the Chiefs radio network. You'll hear him on the call out in sunny L.A. at SoFi Stadium this Sunday afternoon right here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. And he's brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Discover the benefit of blue. I know you're a baseball guy. You obviously played baseball as well. You sense then we're going to have a Blue October again.
Yes, I do. I'm actually dressed in my blue today. I got my Royals cap right next to me. I feel like we're going to make Thursdays Blue Thursday, and we can still keep Red Friday the same. So let's do it, man. I'm looking forward to a postseason run. You guys have heard me say in the past, one of the most incredible experiences I had here in Kansas City, and now this is prior to the Super Bowl, was the run against the wild card game against the Oakland A's by the Royals. To me, that was the first time that I could actually say that I was a fan of baseball. I'm a former baseball player, and I love the game of baseball, but I never really could say that I was like a Royals fan. But that day kind of put me over the top. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to this run.
As for the Chiefs, I'm curious to just get your perspective on where this offense is 3 weeks in. Certainly, you'd rather be 3-0 and try to figure things out than been sitting at 1-2 or 0-3. And so they have that luxury. But do you agree with, I guess, some of the conversation that either we've had or others have had about Patrick Mahomes and his play and this offense not being much different so far than a year ago?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's dead on. I mean, when you consider, like, not only was it abnormal to make the playoffs, but also win the Super Bowl when you're minus 11 in the giveaway takeaway. And that minus 11 I don't put a lot of that weight on the shoulders of the defense. I think the defense did a great job of putting us in position, obviously, to win games and then ultimately win a Super Bowl. But we're minus two now after 3 weeks. So we're kind of falling down that same trap. You just kind of wonder if you can make the magic happen the same exact way. Normally you don't see that happen. But, yeah, Patrick Mahomes, he's going to be the biggest critic of his own play and the inadequacies or inefficiencies of the offense. And I love that mindset. Even as great as he is, he knows he can be better and the offense can be better. So, yeah, this is not necessarily the course that I think we should go down. The way we did it, the way we accomplished things last year was somewhat of an anomaly. And this year, I don't want to go down that road again. I don't want to be a team that's known for drop passes and coming from behind week after week. I feel like we're a better football team than most, if not all, the teams in the NFL. We're a better football team now, and we got to continue to play that way. Now, having said that, there are teams that have peaked. Like, we've seen the best of certain teams. They might have one win. They might have two wins. But we've seen the best, and they just hope to keep the same energy throughout the rest of the season. We haven't seen the best of the Chiefs. And I think that's an encouraging factor as well, that we can continue to get better. And we are. We've shown that, and I have confidence that we will.
When you look at what they're doing from a deep passing game, how much of that is just they need a few more weeks to get Xavier Worthy under there? He's got more yardage in the first three games than Rashee Rice had in the first three games last year. We know it takes a while, Danen, for wide receivers and Andy Reid's offense to get the proper credit. At some point, do you think that they're going to keep trying to find Xavier Worthy more and more down the field?
Oh, I think so. I think it's a work in progress. Like you mentioned, last year, Rashee Rice, prior to the bye week, was different than after the bye week. That might be the same for Xavier Worthy. But also remember, like we've talked about, when you break the huddle, like specifically this week, when you break the huddle, you're looking to see where number 52 is, Khalil Mack. You're looking to see, you would have been where Derwin James was had he not been suspended. There's going to come a time, or there is a time now, when Xavier Worthy breaks the huddle, the defense knows what they're in store for and what his route tree consists of, and that's deep routes and 4-2-1 speed. So they're prepared for that. That's opened the door up for guys like Rashee and other playmakers to make plays closer to the line of scrimmage. Like, I feel like that's par for the course, but there's going to come a time where he's going to be showing himself as a more complete receiver, running dig routes, hook routes, comebacks on the outside, that complete receiver route tree, and then those deep routes are going to be open. Like, his speed, they're prepared for it now because he hasn't shown anything else yet, but I feel like Matt Nagy and Andy Reid have something in store that will showcase him as a better complete receiver, just like we saw with Rashee.
Danen, the way you talked about Khalil Mack and Derwin James made me think about something else about the offense, which is defense has spent 10-plus years with every team meeting I imagine on defense being, how the hell do we stop Travis Kelce? With no answers for a long time, but I imagine he was the first guy they stuck up on tape. Like, what the hell do we do with this guy? How long will it take teams to adjust to, because I think they still are doing that with Travis Kelce, and instead be like, what if we tried to stop Rashee Rice this week instead?
So it's going to be more difficult to stop Rashee Rice. Not more difficult to stop him than Travis Kelce, but just more difficult to stop him in general because a lot of his mileage comes after the catch. So it's one thing to guard him where you are not allowing him to catch the ball, but if he's able to catch the ball, just like a lot of receivers where they fall down, they get knocked out of bounds, they get tackled immediately, they're a little bit slight in weight so they don't bounce off of guys. He gets downfield as quickly as anyone in the NFL outside of maybe Tyreek Hill. Like, soon as he catches the ball, he's going north-south, and he's getting elusive. He's spinning off of tackles, getting yardage after catch. He's a top in the NFL, a yardage after catch. And that's tough to guard. So you can game plan the routes. You can game plan the concepts and making adjustments. But when he's moving in motion, you that's tough to game plan. You can't put a lockdown corner on a guy that's moving in motion from side to side or shifting from one side to the other or using pick routes downfield. So Travis Kelce might be technically easier to game plan against because you have linebackers that are his size, you have safeties that are his speed, you can run combo coverages. But Rashee Rice, when he's running horizontally on shallow crosses and deep crosses, and then as soon as he catches the ball, he's running faster than your guy on defense and harder and tougher, makes it a tough, tough day for anybody to game plan against. So I think it's a great compliment. At some point, they're going to make a focus of trying to stop him. I don't know if they'll be successful, but then that will definitely open the door for Travis to do his magic.
We're talking to former Chiefs wide receiver Danan Hughes. He'll be on the call this Sunday with Mitch Holthus, Josh Klingler, and Dan Israel right here on 96.5 The Fan. The backfield last week, we asked you about it and how that was going to break out. We saw Carson Steele get 17 touches. We saw Samaje Perine have 6 carries. We now know that Kareem Hunt is going to be active on Sunday along with Perine and Carson Steele. What do you expect from Kareem Hunt? He sounded very, very excited to be back in Kansas City yesterday.
I think that's what we're going to see, is an excited player back on the field. It's one thing to not have played this entire season and have the opportunity, but it's also another thing to have some sense of redemption to a city, to a kingdom. And that's kind of what I expect. I've been in that locker room, guys, and I've been in situations where whether you've had issues at home, issues in your family, maybe some things going on within your team or your teammates or your unit, maybe experience some losses on the field, and you use everything as motivation. Whatever you can tap into, you use as motivation. You think about the guys that have played, the Tom Brady's that say, every week I want to make the other 31 teams pay because I had to be drafted as late as I did in the draft, or other players that talk about being passed up. Aaron Rodgers, etc. Like, everything is momentum. Everything is something motivating you to go out on the field. So I can expect that Kareem Hunt is going to be very emotional because he's going to have an opportunity to have some sense of redemption for a team that drafted him and he had success in that rookie season. So, like, him getting an opportunity, he's going to run as tough and as hard as we probably have ever seen him. And I'm sure that's part of the reason why Andy feels so comfortable activating him so quickly.
If you were the Chargers, would you risk Justin Herbert's health knowing the tackles are injured?
That's a tough question because I feel like part of me says yes, because you don't want to get too far behind in the AFC West. You don't want to put your best foot forward. No pun intended. You don't want to put your best foot forward and not hopefully quiet down the Chiefs from them going 4-0. But at the same time, that's one of those injuries that rest is really the only thing you can counter it with. Like, that's the only way you're going to get healthy is rest. Battling through injuries to a certain extent, you always tip your cap to guys that are tough. But then that's when the coaches and the training staff, we've been down that road with Patrick. Yeah. Where you gotta protect players against themselves, and you gotta look at the big picture. So part of me says it's week 4, make a smart decision. The other part of me, from a competitive side, especially if I'm Justin Herbert, says, man, like, we can't afford to give up any game or our best opportunity to get any game up on the Kansas City Chiefs to stop them from this reign in the AFC West.
Justin Herbert's injury status aside, what have you seen from the Chargers through a couple of these games? I know the schedule has been their schedule. They can't do anything about that. It's been kind of soft, though, to this point in time. Have you seen anything offensively outside of J.K. Dobbins that the Chiefs should be concerned about?
That's the number one thing that came to my mind right before you said J.K. Dobbins' name. The running game, the rushing attack, Jim Harbaugh putting his stamp, his DNA on this organization, and them playing solid football to be 2-1, to experience the injuries that they've had. Like, they have a complete mass unit at injuries. You talk about the tackles as well as Justin Herbert, Joey Bosa on that list as well. Right? And now Derwin James out with the suspension, but they are a gritty fighting team. And that defense, even without Derwin James, is still going to be a tough and formidable defense. So they've turned the ball over. They're a top five team in the giveaway takeaway. So they're doing things that you would say would warrant a good football team, potentially a very good football team, from a defensive standpoint and running game standpoint. They're not throwing the ball well, but they're not asking their guys, especially with the injury of Herbert, to really take chances and having to throw the ball down the field. They're winning old school style. Tough defense, hard-nosed running. And that's what we got to be prepared for. I feel like if we can put them in predictable situations, that'll bode well for us. They've always had guys, even when you go back to Austin Eckler, they always had guys that can catch the ball well out of the backfield and make it easy on the quarterback, swing routes, screen routes, angle routes out of the backfield, just to move the ball down the field. And when they've been successful against us, just like most other teams, especially during the Patrick Mahomes era, it's been when they've been successful keeping Patrick Mahomes on the sideline. And that's what the running game does. So for us, that's where our hands are going to be full, stopping J.K. Dobbins and kind of putting it on their defense, moving their defense, keeping them on skates and moving backwards.
Danen Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver. You'll hear him on the broadcast this Sunday out in L.A. right here on 96.5 The Fan. And you got another weekend, it looks like, where you don't have to be depressed about your Iowa Hawkeyes. They don't play Ohio State till next week, right?
Yeah, right. I know. We got the Floyd of Rosedale back, so we won one of two trophies this year so far.
Right.
So it's going to be a tough road the rest of the way now.
There you go. Thanks, Danen. That's Danen Hughes. He joins us throughout the football season, and you can, of course, hear him, as I said, during the Chiefs game as a color analyst with Mitch Holthus right here on 96.5 The Fan. He's brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Discover the benefit of blue.
We're getting ready to hand things off to the Royals and Josh Vernier coming up here in about 15 minutes. As we speak, there's a video out, Nationals Park. Guess who's taking some batting practice?
Oh, I would assume I know who.
Vinny Pasquantino is officially at batting practice today at Nationals Park. Another step in his recovery, according to Jalen Thompson, who sent out a little video over there on social media. I was told yesterday his scans came back good. Everything was normal and healing the way that it should be, but that there's still not, it's an unknown whether or not he'll be able to return. It's too soon to tell you whether or not he will be able to make it back to this team this season. But I'll be honest, scans coming back well and him physically swinging a bat, does that get me excited about the possibility of Vinny Pasquantino in an ALCS series? Hell yeah, it does. But they got to get there first.
Yeah, so
I don't think, based on anybody I've spoken to, stunned would be the way I would describe if he were available for the wild card series. Really, pretty stunned if he was back for a DS series, if they were to make it that far. ALCS is maybe still the earliest I think he could return, but the team might be more optimistic about his recovery. The fact that he's swinging a bat does not rule it out, though, I'll say. That's
no, all. I mean, it's great. I'm happy for him that he has this opportunity to even go to this point in time. But remember, let's not forget, when he got hurt, it was always if he comes back, it's probably an ALCS thing.
Mm-hmm. I remember the timeline was 6 to 8 weeks, six being the earliest. You know, 6 weeks would put him back ALCS.
And as a player in his spot, obviously, he should have a more optimistic timeline that, no, I can maybe beat that. But, it's cool to see this, but I'll be honest, until they even get to the
you don't want to worry about
until
what
they
Vinny's
even
doing,
get to an ALDS, if they get there and also are trending towards winning said series, I'm not even thinking about that.
I'll make a song for Vinny if he gets close.
Okay,
they get
fine.
To the ALCS.
Okay.
I'll sing. What song can I do for not Pasquantino anymore? Can I do you know that song, Baby Come Back? Can I just sing that back?
You do whatever you want. you whatever you need to do.
If they're
whatever
in the ALCS, you're down. At that
sure.
point.
At that point, nobody will care. Like, you can sing whatever the hell you want.
Doesn't sound like a ringing endorsement
from
you.
They'll be in the ALCS or ALDS.
So we'll all be in a good mood.
Yeah, nobody's going to care. It'll be fine. You can do whatever you want.
Okay.
And you might be getting nervous about your tattoo at that point.
I forgot about that for a little while.
And
I did promise
to win it to not get there either.
That was like, I'm not kidding. We look back. That was like April 19th or something. I said, if the Royals win the World Series issue, I'll get that tattoo. And I was like, I mean, it's way more real than I thought then because they're going to be in the postseason most likely at this point, or at least they're a 85% favorite, even implied odds to make the postseason right now. So it's certainly a risk. Meanwhile, I don't know. It's so hard because I want to see playoff baseball in Kauffman Stadium this year, and we're not even guaranteed that because of the wild card round.
Right.
But also, I want playoff baseball in Kauffman Stadium before it's gone. They're not going to be in Kauffman forever, and I'm watching, like, people physically tear the Oakland Stadium apart like marauders yesterday, getting arrested on the way out the building. The energy's weird there.
Well, and that's also in the you know, goes with the ownership issue out in Oakland many, many years.
Fisher's
and fans thinks. Feeling wronged and all that. But yeah, how about the report that yesterday, and today's the final game for the Athletics in their stadium ever, and final game in Oakland, I should say, period. But six security guards, I guess, according to Bob Nightingale, were chasing a man who stole a stadium suite outside the stadium. I wish we had video that six security guards just running after one guy that's got two stadium chairs.
Just let him have it, dude.
I think the issue, besides the obvious of, like, technically, you know, theft, is that
they're gonna bulldoze it.
It's not the owner doesn't own the stadium, so, like, you're not really screwing him over, even though that's what fans are trying to do. But yeah, I think they're demolishing it, so, you know, it's kind of whatever. The city probably wants to sell those seats, make some money,
I guess. And yes, probably they do, but just let the one guy leave with his seat, okay? Who cares? Did you see how crappy they looked?
Oh, they were all rusted out.
Rusted. Yeah. They looked miserable.
What do you expect? That place, I mean,
is that what Kauffman's going to look like?
No.
If they got a new stadium getting built, they're going to stop taking care of it, and just by the time it's over, it's just going to be like, ugh.
It is not possible for Kauffman to ever look like that dump in Oakland. It's just not. It's not. It would have to sit there unused for 15 years to be what the Oakland Coliseum has been. We heard stories from Mitch Holthus back in the day about the press box there. You know, they had to put cups up there because it would leak. We've always heard the sewage issues at Oakland Coliseum.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. It's a dump, right? Would you try to steal something? Like if you let's just say you happen to be a Kauffman for the final game. I would plan on being a Kauffman for the final game because I like the oddity of it. I want to see the final game at Kauffman Stadium. You swiping something? Like, I'm not asking what you're stealing. What I'm asking is, would you try to take
something? Yeah.
I think it's natural human instinct to be standing in that building in its last game and be like, you know what? What's a big deal if I just swiped this? The number placard on the back of my seat or a soap dispenser that still says 2015 World Champions in, like, the press area. Are they going to miss it? I think it'd probably be fine.
That's going to do it for us on a Thursday.
Me saying steal from Kauffman on the way up.
We're back at it tomorrow. We'll have a full show getting set for the weekend ahead. Of course, the Chiefs game against the Chargers. But tomorrow we could be talking about the Royals being a win away, depending on the weather, right? And how today goes, a win away from clinching a playoff spot. For now, though, let's enjoy some day baseball right here on 96.5 The Fan. Vern's On Deck show gets you set for it for the nation's capital next.